When couples avoid money talks, it's not about the numbers, it's about fear. Lauren Klein joins us to unpack what women are really afraid of when it comes to money, divorce, and the conversations surrounding it.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Lauren Klein on the show, and we had a powerful conversation about money, divorce, and planning for the future. Lauren shared why couples avoid money conversations, how women can rewire their money beliefs, and the steps they need to protect themselves financially during and after divorce. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, I'm joined by Lauren Klein, co-founder of Flourish Law Group and a Florida-based attorney specializing in estate and tax planning, elder law, and probate administration. Lauren and her all-women team focus on helping clients protect their families, navigate financial complexities, and build lasting wealth, whether they are high-net-worth clients or everyday families. Today, Lauren and I will be discussing why couples avoid money conversations and what that really means, how women can rewire their money beliefs for financial success, and practical steps to protect yourself financially during and after divorce. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you, Heather. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I am so happy to have you. Love having lawyers and a Florida lawyer, so that is great on the show. So for our listeners, would you share a little bit about yourself and really how you got into this practice area and doing all the stuff that you are doing?
Absolutely. So happy to be here. I, as you mentioned, Heather, am a estate planning and tax attorney. So I got my start in law school, you know, back in 2009, going into law school, having no idea whether I wanted to practice law or what I wanted to do. I was originally a finance major, but it was, you know, 08, 09, and the job industry for those in the finance space was a little uncertain, you know, with everything that was happening within the economy. So I thought, okay, I'll go to law school. I'll bide my time. Not sure what I was going to do. Ended up taking a wills and trust class, falling in love with it. Then a tax class, and much to my own surprise, falling in love with that too. And it really led me down a path of wanting to serve families and entrepreneurs and going into, you know, the profession of being a trust and estates attorney, which I absolutely love. And I have now done exclusively for my entire almost 15 year career at this point.
Well, that is great. And it is a great practice. And I can't wait to really get into it. First, let's talk about how Flourish Law is different from the traditional estate planning or tax law experience.
Yes. So I can speak to this because I have worked in the traditional space for many years. So prior to starting Flourish Law Group, I was at one of the largest firms in the nation and the firm that actually has the largest private wealth services group. So I was working with some of the highest net worth clients in the country and abroad. Very traditional, very, you know, standard, very male dominated. And I loved what I was doing and I was learning a ton, but I was just having these aha moments of why is it only the top 1% of the top 1% who's getting access to this high quality, you know, of legal planning from an estate planning perspective. So I ended up leaving. I was about to make partner and I made a very, you know, kind of bold decision, left, started Flourish Law Group with actually my best friend and college roommate who at the time was at US Trust. And she was administering trust for high net worth families. We put our heads together. We said, how can we do this? Have these conversations, help our clients in a way that feels warm. It feels welcoming. We can rely on technology, which is not always happening in the legal career. We often are slow to move when it comes to technology. So we really have created a firm that we don't just focus on the documents. We're focusing on the people. We're walking them through the process. We're telling them no question is a stupid question. We're starting from the basics and then building on from there. And it's been really wonderful to kind of see, you know, the clients have those their own aha moments of, oh, this is what estate planning is. And this has how it actually affects my family, not only, you know, down the road, but and having really meaningful conversations and conversations about pretty, you know, scary, heavy topics, sometimes death, incapacity, but also, like you said, money. Right. So it's been really great to create this experience and still refining it. But that's what we're doing over here.
Well, that is great. Now, what inspired you to build an all women firm with that, you know, of course, unique client focused approach?
So when I looked around, and I'm sure you've had this experience over the years too, you know, I was at a firm that most of the partners were male. There were some really incredible female partners as well, but the majority of the partners were male. The majority of the financial advisors that we were working with were men, and love men. I had some really great mentors over the years, but I thought to myself, okay, how can we do this in a way that makes our clients who are women feel comfortable, feel supported? Mm-hmm. We can bring, you know, I don't like soft skills. I don't know that that's the word I love, but I think we just, as women, I'm generalizing, we tend to approach things in a much more well-rounded way, a warmer way. We can see some of the reading between the lines of the client's emotions, you know, that they're experiencing throughout this process, and really approach mm-hmm. that through a really, you know, a place of strength and also a place of compassion. And so it's been really great. And of course, we have many male clients. But the vast majority of the decision makers in our client, you know, in our couples are the women. So it's been great to create an all women firm with clients of all shapes and sizes and genders.
That's awesome. Now, let's talk about some money conversations. And when couples avoid money conversations, what do you find they're really afraid of?
I think it kind of starts with just feeling like they don't know what to do or how to move forward, or they don't see that clear path forward, so they get stuck. Because it's interesting, when we meet with clients, and we have clients that are very high net worth, and we have clients who maybe they just have, you know, a condo on the beach and a bank account. Right. It's interesting because most people come to us and they say something very similar. They say, hey, Lauren, hey, Kristen, I don't really have that much. And sometimes these are people with estates of $2, $3, $5+ million. So I think it's kind of in my, I think from my perspective, from what I've gathered, it's a fear of being judged for not knowing. You know, they don't have an estate plan, or maybe they have one, but the lawyer never explained. Maybe there's a fear of loss of control if we're talking about incapacity or death, or just an insecurity around not knowing how to talk about money. And oftentimes it's also very much tied to their identity and their self-worth. So we're kind of breaking down all of that while also having a very legal focused conversation, and then balancing that with the emotions. But we've found that our role obviously is one to provide, you know, high quality legal advice and estate planning documents and strategies, you know, based on whether they're coming to us in a divorce situation or before marriage, or they have an elderly parent that they need to care for, whatever, or a special needs child, whatever the circumstance is, it's usually going to bring up things that can feel scary. Mm-hmm. But I think where we really try to help the clients is, let's break this down. Let's answer all of your questions. Let's talk about what this process actually looks like. And let's take some of that fear out of this conversation and really just make it an open space where, like I said, there's no stupid questions. And it's great to see the clients, just the light bulbs kind of go off. And as the relationship grows, just get comfortable with us. And it is a relationship. It doesn't always happen in meeting one, which I'm sure is your experience too. It often takes time, and it's relationship, and we plan on being with our clients for the long haul. So it is a relationship that we're building, not just transactions.
Absolutely. Now, why do so many women hesitate to take an active role in family finances, and how can they start changing that?
Yeah, you know, I think about this question and this topic a lot, especially because so many of the decision makers, when we have, you know, heterosexual couples or a woman as the only client, they are the decision maker. They're running the family. Right. Yeah. They're like the family CEO, even if they're working outside of the home. But it's, you know, so many studies have shown that so few women invest, even though when we do invest, we tend to outperform. Our investments tend to outperform our male counterparts. We're often keeping a lot of money in savings, and we're not making, I don't want to say as aggressive decisions, but as, you know, strategic decisions. So I think it comes again from a fear of feeling like you don't know what you're doing, that you're somehow behind, you know, that you're missing out on something, or you're behind, you know, the curve, which is usually not true. Usually our women clients are ahead of the curve, or that money management just is not their lane, or it's not what they're quote unquote good at. I don't know that anyone's born at being good with money or bad with money. It's often things that we learned from our childhood, our family, our life experiences. But I think just starting with, hey, most people don't know what they're doing, or they think they don't know what they're doing. And most people don't know what a will versus a trust is. So like taking away that feeling of, oh, I'm alone, I'm the only one who doesn't know. Taking that away and just bringing in awareness and education, I think is a really, really great first step. And just kind of helping them in some ways, you know, start to unwind some of those limiting beliefs. And then just giving them that safe space to ask questions, to talk about their money, to talk about what would happen without an estate plan or without an effective estate plan, we have seen really allows our clients to start to build the confidence that then actually leads them to action. Because so many people come to us saying, oh, I've been meaning to do my estate planning for years. And a lot of our clients are lawyers. So it's very interesting to see that too. But I think once they have the confidence, they can then take action. And it just, you know, we see it. It brings that peace of mind of, if I'm traveling or if something happens, I have thought everything out. I have a plan just in case, you know, just in case.
Just in case. It's true. And it's so important. Yeah. Now, I think this leads into a great question about money beliefs, right? And what are some money beliefs maybe that even you've had to rewrite in your own journey? And how can women listening do the same?
Oh my gosh. So I've had to, you know, really rewrite so many money beliefs within my own life and rewire my brain. I come from a family, you know, middle class family that did well enough, but that it always felt like money was hard. You know, in order to make a lot of money, you had to work really hard. And maybe that meant you wouldn't get to see your kids, or you wouldn't get to have a, you know, a balanced lifestyle. And so money just wasn't really that available to us. It felt like something unattainable. You know, money is the root of all evil. I grew up in a very religious household. So, you know, greed is kind of tied to money. So once I went to law school and started looking at, you know, my job options and started working, I realized, wow, I have a lot of stuff to unlearn. And, you know, even within the legal industry, I think there's a lot of wiring that takes place in law school. Be the best, you know, and you have to outwork everyone and almost burn yourself out for success. So I had to do a lot of, you know, really looking at what my beliefs were around money and saying, is this ultimately true? You know, is this the only way? And at every level, you know, and I see this with our clients too, it comes up. You know, when I accepted my big law position, it came up again. And then when I left the, you know, the nice paycheck and started a firm and entered the entrepreneurial space, it came up again. Okay, how am I going to do this in a way that is sustainable? And how can I, you know, continue to increase my income every year without increasing the amount of hours that I'm working? Same thing for our clients. I think it's whatever their limiting beliefs are often have stopped them from taking action with their money, with their finances, with their estate planning. And so, you know, we don't go to our clients and say, okay, it's time to rewire your brain. We don't approach it in that way. It's kind of a behind the scenes, you know, where we get to help them write new money stories, to feel comfortable talking about these topics. Some of our clients even believe myths like if you do your estate plan, you'll pass away. That tends to be a common myth in certain communities. So really just listening and hearing them and holding space for whatever it is that they need, and then giving, you know, our opinion and our recommendations as far as what their planning is going to look like. But especially when it comes to our women clients, we see it pop up a lot where they feel like they have to be perfect before they can act, which is, of course, just something we tell ourselves oftentimes. So it's our honor to help them work through that and get to see them kind of look at, you know, money differently. It's honestly very rewarding to see that.
I believe it for sure. One of the things I believe, and I've talked to various guests over the years about it, but we all do have a money story, and we all have a lot of things tied up in our beliefs about money. And that is one of the biggest things that leads to divorce, right? Is money, lack of or too much or whatever. But usually you're both entering a marriage, and the one thing that they should talk about and really try to understand from each other's perspective is their beliefs about money that they never do. It's one of the things that I think, like with a, if we were to get more people to understand the value of a prenup, like the number one thing being, you're talking about issues that will come up. You think, oh, if we talk about them, then it's going to happen. No, it's going to come up. And it's just whether or not the marriage is going to, you know, sustain through those issues or not. And a big one is, how can you do? Can you even talk about money? How can you talk about money? How do you feel about debt? And how do you feel about spending and those types of things that are huge in a marriage? And often it's in the divorce, they're like, I didn't know he had so much debt. You know, they're learning all these things at that time, which is not the time. Well, I mean, you're going to learn about it then, but yeah, it would be better to know going in, right?
Absolutely. It's so true. You know, we had a client once when they went through the prenuptial agreement process. They said, that was almost like therapy, and I feel closer to my fiance than I ever have before, because we put everything on the table from a financial perspective, and it allowed us to have that conversation before we enter into, you know, this contract. Doesn't sound romantic, yeah, but that's really what it is.
Well, it is. And it, to me, I think could be, you know, I have all these ideas and thoughts all the time, as I'm sure you do, because you're creating things all the time. But you're like, wow, if more couples had those conversations and were really open prior to the marriage, it would benefit the marriage in the long run, going through a prenuptial process in that kind of way that was very positive in supporting the union and the communication. But if they looked at it that way, I think it would prevent a lot of divorces.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, this is kind of outside of the prenup process. But if clients talked about, this is my money style, you know, this is my childhood story with money, this is how I now look at money today, you know, I prefer to be aggressive, or I want to be very conservative within my investing, or mm-hmm, here's what I'm unaware of and I want to learn more about. What I think happens is, when you go through the prenup process, sometimes it then leads to those conversations, and it kind of opens up the door, yeah, to topics that are not necessarily going to be part of, you know, the legal process of a prenup. At least that's been my experience. And I love when I see that happen with clients, because yeah, it's exciting. And I think it does increase the chance that the marriage will last.
Which was like a little side detour. However, it is relative and relevant to what we're talking about, because let's talk about estate planning and how it can tie into divorce, and why it's so important not to ignore wills, trusts, and tax issues when you are headed for a divorce.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any life transition is a really, really great time to look at your estate plan or update your estate plan. But I think divorce is probably one of the most, if not the most important time. Obviously, mm-hmm, you know, death of a family member or children or moving to a new state can also be a transition that is important, is an important time to look at your estate plan. But divorce, right, can change a lot. And it depends on the state where you're located. Sometimes when there's a divorce, it removes the spouse as a beneficiary if there's a will or a trust, but not in every state, you know, so that's important. And it can depend on, you know, if it's will or trust versus life insurance versus a brokerage account, if you've named them as a beneficiary. So you're going to want to schedule a meeting with your, preferably with your, you know, maybe your estate planning attorney, your family law attorney, and even your financial advisor. And if you're high, mm-hmm, net worth, or if you have any complex tax issues beyond the scope of a good tax attorney, maybe bring in your CPA as well, because you want to know, okay, this is where I stand right now. Once this divorce is finalized, this is the new reality. How do I need to update my documents to make sure that either, you know, if you don't want your ex to inherit anymore, to confirm that that is the case. Sometimes clients still want their ex to inherit something. Just, you know, I've seen this many times. Just because you're getting a divorce, wow, doesn't always mean that you cut that person out. Sometimes you still want them involved, right, in some way. We've drafted a number of estate plans, you know, like that. Or maybe you still, yeah, want your ex to be a trustee. You know, maybe it's a trust, mm, for your children. And you're like, listen, I don't want to be married to this person anymore. But if I'm not here to manage these funds as trustee, I would still want my ex to fill that role. Or maybe you say, absolutely not, over, you know, no pun intended, over my dead body would I ever want my ex managing these funds. You need to make sure, mm-hmm, that your documents reflect that, and you're not just leaving it up to the state law. You want to make it very, very clear. You want to go over all of your beneficiary designations on all of your accounts, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, life insurance, to make sure that everything is buttoned up. Go over your power of attorney or your healthcare documents. Who's going to make financial and legal decisions? And when does that change? In Florida, for example, if you have a power of attorney and you file for divorce, that typically will remove that spouse as an agent, which makes sense because they could technically move bank accounts and, you know, money around or sign over real estate. Maybe not some not good stuff. But other documents like healthcare, they may not be removed until the divorce is finalized. So what if something happens to you during the, you know, the time of the divorce while it's pending and you go into surgery and you need someone to make a decision? So you'll want to, before you file, start looking into this, continue to monitor it during the divorce process. And then, of course, make sure everything is, you know, wrapped up and really refined after the divorce. Because as you know, divorce can have major impacts on the estate planning, on tax planning, and on your wealth as a whole. So, you know, not to kind of really like hammer it home too much, but if anyone is listening and they're thinking about getting divorced, or they're in the process, or they were divorced, even if it was a long time ago, talk to, you know, a good trust and estates lawyer, preferably someone who's a tax attorney, to make sure that everything works the way that you think it's going to work.
Exactly. That's one of the most important things. We'll have, and I'm sure this happens for you a lot, we'll have someone who was divorced a few years ago, and then they bring us the document, and it doesn't say what they think it says. And our job is like, okay, well, let me tell you what this does say and what this means for you. Because unfortunately, they're usually very long, can be more complicated documents that, you know, that aren't in our everyday language, a lot of legalese, and not everyone always understands them. And that's really important to have a lawyer review what you've already got to make sure it says what you think it says, because sometimes that can happen for sure.
And even during the divorce, you can make sure that you incorporate estate planning provisions within the divorce settlement, you know, and sometimes that can be really, really important depending on your net worth and depending on what the tax situation is, especially if maybe, you know, your future ex has some tax debts that haven't been paid. Having everything reviewed while the divorce is in process, I think, can be really key as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you a question, because I think our listeners would like to know. I've heard for years, and some of this from different individuals in different states, namely like California. They're like, you've got to put everything in a trust before you get married, or even when you're married, you need to have a trust, because then that protects it from being divided in a divorce. Now, that is a very general, big question, loaded, but I'd love for you to give us a little bit of insight on what a trust can and can't do, and what can it protect you from?
Yeah, I love this question. And we're talking about this with, you know, potential clients and current clients all day, because there is a lot of confusion around what is a trust? What does it actually accomplish? Mm-hmm. So let's break it down a little bit. So when we think of a trust, we're thinking of basically like a backpack that we're going to put things into. But there's different types of trusts. So there's a revocable trust, which is kind of, you know, the most common and usually highly recommended to have in every estate plan. So the revocable trust is very easy to administer. I personally have a revocable trust. I am the grantor. I'm the person who created it. I'm the trustee, meaning I could manage the assets. I can put assets in, take them out, do whatever I need to do. I have full control as trustee and grantor. And I'm also the primary beneficiary with my spouse and ultimately our children as the successor beneficiaries. Now, because this is a revocable trust, it doesn't provide me personally with creditor protection. So if a creditor, you know, sues the trustee, there's not going to be protection unless there's other creditor protected assets like homestead or a limited liability company or something to that effect. And it also doesn't prevent or protect from estate tax. So right now in the U.S., if you're a U.S. individual, you know, a citizen or permanent resident, you can give away or die with almost $15 million at the federal level before you have to worry about estate tax. And Florida does not have any state level estate tax. So some clients want to go the next step and they want to create irrevocable trust, which I'll talk about in a moment. But essentially, anything that I have in my revocable trust, it's not protected from creditors, and there's no protection from estate tax. So what does it do? It allows the assets within that trust to avoid probate, which is a process, essentially, if I have any assets in my individual name, so not in a revocable trust, not jointly held with rights of survivorship, and not with a beneficiary designation, like a transfer on death or payable on death named. Let's say brokerage account that's just in my name. I never named a beneficiary. I never moved it into the trust. I'm the sole owner. If I pass away, in order for that brokerage account to get to either beneficiaries I've named in a will, or if I don't have an estate plan per the laws of the state where I die, where I reside when I die, it has to go through this very complex, very frustrating process called probate, where everything gets put before a judge. It all becomes public information. At least in Florida, a lawyer like myself must be hired to administer and to oversee the process. And it can take years for the assets to finally get distributed. So by putting assets in a revocable trust, I'm avoiding that whole mess that is, you want to avoid probate to the greatest extent that you can. And also, absolutely, it's orderly administration of my estate. So who gets my assets next? A spouse. How does he get it? In a trust. That is irrevocable, that he can't change. So it goes to our kids, even if he gets remarried or he has other children, whatever it might be. Good for him, no problem, but not the assets that he's inheriting from me. So that's what a revocable trust does. And I'll pause for a second before I turn to the irrevocable trust and see if you have any questions. I know, well, I could like go on and on.
For our listeners, I think, you know, they'll say, okay, does that do anything for me in a divorce? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm going to tell them, well, if it was all created during the marriage, it's all marital. So it's all going to kind of come out anyway. And am I right in saying that in the revocable? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Now, if you did an irrevocable trust prior to the marriage and you put non-marital assets in that irrevocable trust, there's a lot more protection from those assets. But what happens with a revocable trust is often you're using those funds for the family and they're starting to, you know, maybe become marital property.
Yes.
And from a death perspective, you know, unless there's a prenup or a postnup, that spouse is going to have, you know, rights depending on which state you live in. So it's really important to know what the right strategy is. And a lot of that will depend on what your net worth is and what your assets are. But I think it's really important pre-marriage to get a sense of what makes sense based on our goals and how does that need to tie into the prenuptial agreement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now let's talk about an irrevocable trust, because those happen too. And we get a lot of questions around that sometimes during a divorce.
Yeah. So an irrevocable trust, which contrast with the revocable trust, as the name suggests, it's something that can't be changed. Now, there's exceptions, of course, to that. But the overarching concept is it's a trust that I've now created, and it is what it is. So the beneficiaries are what they are. The terms are what they are. Depending on the state, you know, there's some ways to have modification provisions or things like that. But because I am putting something into this irrevocable trust, I'm removing it from my name. I'm removing it from my estate from that estate tax perspective. And also, if it's happening before marriage, from my marital assets that are accessible in the event of a divorce. So it's much more final, much more finite, and it can make sense if the circumstances are right. Now, because I'm putting an asset into this trust and I'm removing it from my name, in most jurisdictions, I cannot be the beneficiary of those assets. So that's why it has to make sense. It has to be assets that I don't intend to live off of. I don't intend to benefit from. And for many clients, they don't want to have to do that. They want to be able to benefit from their assets. So maybe a prenuptial agreement and a revocable trust makes a lot more sense. But for some clients, you know, if they're high net worth or if they have assets that they really want to protect from a future spouse, or if they have creditor protection concerns, like a physician, for example, they may want to consider an irrevocable trust as part of their overall estate plan. They're still going to want a revocable trust for the other assets. Right. So it really, really depends on, again, those facts and circumstances.
Yes. Well, I'm so glad. I wanted to just touch on that because people ask us those things all the time. And we are not trust and estate lawyers or divorce attorneys. We deal with it when it comes into, when it's there during the divorce. And that, again, tends to be more about, well, hey, what was the intent? how are you using those funds? And then we can really give them advice as to, hey, this is what could be at risk or not. But always good to cover and talk to someone like Lauren, for sure, about that. Now, your clients often describe you as more like a trusted friend than a lawyer. Why is that trust so important when it comes to money and divorce?
Yeah, it's honestly our favorite compliment when someone says this to us. You know, one time we were having an in-person consult, and it was, you know, a Friday afternoon, and we're like, why don't we have a little wine? You know, it's the end of the day, it's the end of the week. And they're like, you know, I feel like, because it was a pretty complex situation. And she said to us, she's like, I feel like I'm sitting here talking to a trusted friend who happens to have a unique set of skills and expertise in a certain area. Right. And I Kristen and I both looked at her and said, you know, that's what we love. That's why we love what we do, because we are really good at what we do, but we really try to break it down and not just throw code sections at our clients' faces. Or what we see often is the attorney will say, here's what you should do. You know, here's what you should do. And it's like, it's not here's what you should do. It's here's your recommendations based on what we're hearing and what we're seeing and our understanding of your goals and your concerns. Here's what we would recommend. You know, maybe here's a plan B. See what makes the most sense for you. But we really want to, again, you know, kind of respect and honor the fact that it's money, it's death, it's incapacity, maybe divorce. It's really, you know, it's moments that clients feel vulnerable. We want to hold space for them. We want to approach that transition, whether it's a fun and exciting transition or a difficult one, with compassion, you know, so they do feel that confidence. So that's one of our favorite compliments that we've gotten. And it allows them to then, I think, in my opinion, really dial into what it is they need to do and to feel that trust and that confidence to actually take steps and not put their head in the sand and kind of ignore this piece of their life.
Yes, and that is so important because, yeah, when you're dealing with someone's life, their future, their money, trust really needs to be there, and in a way that hopefully, you know, your clients can really ask you questions that may make them feel vulnerable, but yet that will help you offer them plans and advice that really meet their goals because they're able to open up and share with you what they're wanting. And that's the best thing that you can do, right? When you can really work to achieve our clients' goals and objectives.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you've also said your firm makes estate planning fun and empowering. So what does that look like in practice?
Well, sometimes it does look like wine or champagne in a meeting with clients. You know, that does happen from time to time. Sometimes it's celebrating milestones. You know, clients having new babies or getting married or purchasing their first investment property or starting a business. You know, that's a big part of what we do, is really getting to know our clients and celebrating with them. Sometimes it's actually giving our clients journal prompts and exercises if we see them getting stuck on something. We do workshops sometimes where we'll talk through kind of what we're talking about today, what the different documents look like and how to consider who to name. But then we also give them journaling exercises. Okay, why do you feel stuck on this, you know, this one issue or a challenge? You know, go home and talk to your spouse about who would be a guardian in the very unlikely scenario that you and your spouse were not able to be there for your children. Who would be that person? We try to make our experiences with our clients feel safe, feel warm, almost feel like self-care, not just paperwork. And, you know, sometimes we're dealing with really heavy stuff, like, you know, people passing away and probate administration or divorce. But oftentimes our clients are smiling. They're like, wow, that was actually fun. And they do feel empowered and they have peace of mind, which I think is the best compliment we can ever get, that someone says it's fun. They feel like we're their friends. Not that we need to be their friends, but they feel that they're safe talking to us. Those are our favorite compliments. And I love to hear that because it means people are actually taking action, you know, for their financial health. That's all that estate planning is. It's an extension of your financial health.
And I think that's great because that, you know, that is, it's so, it can be so important, really impact your family and yourself, you know, down the road. But so many people avoid it. And so the fact that you can bring that in, and I know that gives you such a sense of accomplishment because they finished this, that this is really what they wanted and they overcame their fear and they went through it and now they have a plan that protects them and hopefully achieves their objectives. So I think that's great.
I agree.
And it's really, it is important. Now let's talk about The first two or three things a woman should do to financially protect herself if she's considering divorce.
So two or three things to do. I would say, first of all, gather information about your net worth. What do you own? What is your debt? How much are you earning? And how much is going out? Because that way you'll have a sense of where you stand and you'll empower yourself before you even take a step in, you know, towards a divorce. Get an understanding of what's happening. You know, try to figure out if you can what your spouse has if you're not aware. Look at tax returns. If you have access to bank accounts, try to gather as much information as you can, you know, without, you know, maybe setting off any alarm bells. And maybe also start to think about how you can, you know, pay for the divorce. Maybe your future ex-spouse will ultimately pay for the balance of it, depending on the situation. But get a game plan together on how you can pay for this process. I would say, you know, maybe even going and opening up some bank accounts and things like that and figuring out, you know, obviously it's going to depend. I would talk to your divorce attorney first to see if that's going to cause any issues and be safe and protect yourself. But just start to get an understanding within your state of what's allowed, what you can do, but gather that information. And then, of course, kind of what I was just saying, schedule a meeting. If you can have like a joint meeting with a family law attorney, a trust and estate attorney, and your financial advisor, I think that that's the best. You may not need all of that, but I think it's really helpful to get clarity. Now, there's a couple caveats to that. If your trust and estates lawyer represents you and your spouse, I would not recommend necessarily meeting with them if you don't want your future ex-spouse to be alerted, because there's, you know, there's a conflict of interest in that case. The attorney can't hold something from their other client because they represented you together. So think about that. Talk about that with the divorce attorneys or family law attorneys that you are interviewing, but have a team together, you know, to make sure that you're doing everything in the right way, in a strategic way to protect yourself throughout the process.
Absolutely. That's great advice. What role does mindset and confidence play in financial success during and after a divorce, in your opinion?
I mean, I'm a big believer that we create our own reality from our mind. So I think, you know, start to think about, like I said earlier, go back to that, your money beliefs, go back to the childhood stories that you, you know, kind of learned from your parents or your community in your young adult life as a professional or as a parent, and start to get a sense of, okay, what do I believe about money? What fears are coming up? Because if you feel fear and you feel lack and you feel powerless, you're going to approach your divorce process that way. Now, a really great, strong family law attorney can help you through that mindset shift, you know, a lot. So I think when you interview, really look for someone who feels really like they care, you know, like Heather has this whole podcast all about what to do. So you can already tell she cares, because she's putting all of this information out there to help the community at large. And by choosing the right people in your corner, they will help you to empower yourself. But we all have to empower ourselves from within as well. So I would say, you know, money is not a bad thing. It's just a tool. So start to really think about how you can shift your perspective of money, especially if maybe you weren't the person in your relationship who was handling the finances. Because now it's time to take that, not take that power back, because there's no wrong way to do something. But if you are, you know, going through this process, you're going to want to feel empowered around money. And just knowing that confidence doesn't have to be arrogance. It doesn't have to be greed. It's just knowing that you have the power to live the life that you want to live. And if a divorce is going to get you to that point, amazing. You know, support yourself during the process, surround yourself with the right team. And I think it will make, you know, not, it will make the process easy, but hopefully it'll make it easier. Uh-oh. I'm still here. You can't hear me? Am I here?
Oh, good. Yeah, no, you froze up on our screen, but if you are still talking, the audio will come through. And that was a great answer, for sure. Now, Lauren, before we go, our show, as you know, is called Women Winning Divorce, because we believe that you can win a divorce, and we believe at winning at life. So I would love to know what winning at life means to you.
I would say winning at life really is focused on what my biggest value is. And my personal biggest value is freedom to be able to live a life that I want, design my days and my weeks and my months and my years, you know, in a way that we only get this one life, so that achieves the life that I want to have. So for me, winning at life is having the power and the freedom to do what I want to do, to build businesses and practice law the way that I want to, and to serve the clients that I want to work with and in the way that I want to do that. And to me, that is winning at life, even if it feels scary at times. To me, that definitely is the definition of winning at life.
That's great. I love it. I love it. Lastly, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
Yes. So you can check out our website, flourishlawgroup.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Flourish Law Group, or my personal handle at Lawyer Lauren Klein. We're always offering, you know, opportunities to join workshops and masterclasses. We put a lot of information out there just to kind of, again, educate. I would love to connect if anyone has any questions. Those two places are the best places to find us.
Thank you so much. We've reached the end of our show today, and it has been such a pleasure talking with you, Lauren, and I appreciate your joining us and sharing your expertise on financial empowerment, estate planning, and protecting yourself in divorce. Your insights will help so many women listening today feel more confident, empowered, and prepared to take control of their financial futures. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather. This was fantastic. I love your show. I love your mission. And it was an honor to be here today.
Oh, well, thank you.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.